Good morning, dear Sangha. We are in the Dhammanetta Temple in the Assembly of Stars Meditation Hall. Today is Sunday, November the 15th of the year 2009. We will start our winter retreat on the 23rd. It's great happiness to have the opportunity to stay together and practice for 90 days. Our friends have set up communities of mindful living a little bit everywhere in the world. There's an art of living called mindful living. And we know that with mindfulness, we can be truly there in the present moment in order to take care of ourselves, of the people around us, and of the world. The teaching on living in the present moment looks like a simple teaching, but it is very deep. We know that it's important for us to go back to the present moment in order to live deeply our life, every moment of our daily life. And it is said that the past is already gone and the future is not yet there, only the present moment is real. And you should go back to that moment in order to touch the wonders of life and live deeply our life. But in the light of interbeing, we know that the present moment is not possible without the past and the future. According to the law of interdependence, origination, the present moment cannot be there without the support of the past and of the future. If we touch deeply the present moment, we know that the past is somewhere, is still somewhere there, disguised in the present moment. And we have to learn how to handle the present moment in order to be able to transform the past. And we know that the future, although it has not come, but is already there in the present moment. If we touch the present moment deeply, we touch also the future. The future is already there. Issues like global warming, climate change, is not an issue belonging to the future. It is right there. And if we know how to handle the present moment the best way you can, we can assure a good future also. In the teaching of Mahayana, it is impossible for you to grasp your mind in the past. You cannot grasp the past, you cannot grasp the future, and even you cannot grasp the present moment. We think we can take hold of the present moment, but how could we do that? In principle, the past is no longer there, we cannot take hold of it. We know that the future is not yet there, so it's difficult to take hold of that. But the present moment, can you take hold of it? It's very fleeting. as soon as you touch it, it becomes the past. So it's quite difficult to take hold of the present moment. We know that no one can swim twice in the same river. It's because of the fact that everything is impermanent. The second time we go into the river is no longer the same river, because the river is always flowing. The river is impermanent. It looks like the same river, but it's not. So when the river hear us saying that it's impossible for one person to go to the river twice, the river might smile, because the river look at the person, and the river sees that the person is also a river. That person is changing all the time. So even if the same person come back to the river 1 hour later, that's not the same person either. So the person is a kind of river herself. Is there any way that the two rivers can cross, can go together? And that is what we have to find out. The river is not the same river, and the person who come down to the river for the second time is not the same person either. That is the truth about impermanence. And yet, the practice of living in the present moment is real. And we know very well, as practitioners, that if we know how to breathe mindfully, how to walk mindfully, we can come back to the present moment. We can touch it, and we can touch the wonders of life that are in our body, our mind, and around us, even if we know that everything is impermanent, including these wonders of life. When we come back to the present moment, not only we can get in touch with the wonders of life so that we can get the nourishment and the healing that we need, but we can also touch the suffering that is there in the present moment, in us and around us. And with the practice of mindfulness, concentration, and insight, we can handle the suffering in our body, in our mind, and around us. When we speak of climate change, global warming, we know that it is our concern. We know that this is something that happened in the present moment. That is not an issue of the future. And our worry, our fear, our despair is really there in every one of us. Awakening has been happening. Many of us have woke up, written up to the situation. This year we had a retreat in Colorado with the theme One Buddha is Not Enough. It means that we have to produce a kind of collective enlightenment, a collective awakening, in order for this earth of ours could have a future. We really need a collective awakening. That is why one Buddha is not enough. Everyone has to wake up, and how to do that. Waking up is taking place, but very slowly. And every one of us can do something in order to speed up that kind of awakening. And how? We have a lot of fear in us, a lot of anger, and also a lot of delusion in us. There are 6.8 million people on Earth. The Earth is very crowded. And many of us want to consume more because we see that other people are consuming a lot. And we, poor people, we look at them and we want to consume as much as they do. In India, in China, everyone wants to have a house, a car, a computer. And everyone thinks that they have the right to live like Americans. A luxurious life, a lavish life. And we know that the earth is not, cannot afford that at all. In order to live like Americans, we need about five planets, in order to provide us with enough resources. But we only have one. So the Copenhagen conference is going to take place in a few weeks. It will be a 12-day conference. Many heads of state are coming to that conference. And many of us ask the question, as whether they can do something, they can arrive at some kind of agreement in order to cut down the emission of CO2 and so on. And many of us are doubtful because we see that everyone is determined to improve their quality of life as far as consumption is concerned. In India, in China, so many people who see they have opportunity to rise their living standard, and they could not give up that kind of dream. Other people are doing that, are having it, why not us? But we know that it's impossible. The earth will not afford that kind of living standard for everyone. And the people who enjoy their comfortable, luxurious, lavish life are not likely to cut off on their living style. So both the poor people and the rich people don't want to change the idea. We know that our technology is good enough in order to help us to stop using the kind of fuel that is that has been destroying our planet. Technically speaking, it is possible to to provide renewable sources of energy to 100% in the year 2030. We can use wind power, water power, and solar power in order to supply enough energy for the whole planet. Technology speaking, it is possible. But psychologically speaking, and spiritually speaking, it does not seem that technology alone can do that, because people are not ready to support and to participate in that kind of revolution. We know that wind power is now available, and wind power is as cheap as gasoline and charcoal. But water power and solar power are still very expensive. And it's not competitive. So in order to realize our dream, to use only water, wind, and solar powers, because they are renewable sources of energy, we have to decide to stop using the other kind of fuel. In principle, governments can subsidize companies who are working on renewable sources of power in order for them to make their price competitive, so people will have a chance to stop using gasoline and charcoal. But do we have the money to do that? We are spending a lot of money on war, making weapons and so on. We cannot stop our wars. We cannot stop producing weapons, because we have a lot of fear and anger in us. So we know that a psychological dimension, a spiritual dimension should be brought to the solution. In Buddhism, we speak of the three poisons. Craving, desire, that's the first one. You crave for consumption. The other people are consuming, why not us? And not many of us know how to restrain ourselves. Without a spiritual dimension in your life, you cannot restrain yourself. We know that manas, the seventh Vijnana, she ignored the law of moderation. And we know that if we ignore the law of moderation, we will suffer in our body, in our mind, in our very well. So in order to practice moderation in consumption, we really need a spiritual life. We have the tendency of pleasure seeking. It's our nature to seek for pleasure. There is a craving for consumption, for pleasure. And as human beings, we many of us ignore the danger of pleasure seeking. And we destroy our body, our mind, and also our planet with running after pleasure. The fish is about to bite, but if she knows that there is a hook inside of the bite, and she will not bite. If she bite, and then she will hook up, and she lose her life. It's very tempting, the pleasure. And we need intelligence. We need understanding. We need awakening in order not to do that. We have the tendency to run after pleasure, but we ignore the danger of pleasure seeking. And that is why there should be enlightenment, waking up, awakening, enlightenment. Enough for us to have the power, the capacity to restrain ourselves. Once you have seen the danger, once you have wakened up to the danger, you know you want to stop. If you ignore the danger, you continue. And you destroy your body, your mind, and your planet. And that is why we know that one Buddha is not enough. A few Buddhas are not enough. You have to produce many Buddhas. Everyone has to wake up. And we have to work for a collective awakening. That there is a danger. There's a real danger. The danger is there, not in the future. And with that kind of enlightenment, we will be able to stop. Fear. Many countries are operating on fear. If we continue to look for weapons, we don't have enough money to buy food for our people, but we have to purchase weapons. And that is why they continue to manufacture weapons. The weapon industries bring a lot of money to the national budget. Many big powers in the world are producing weapons and sell it to other countries, because they always say that if you don't have these weapons, you are in a dangerous situation. So they are promoting fear. And most of us operate on the base of fear. If Iran want to fabricate nuclear weapons, if North Korea wants to have nuclear power, that's because of fear. And the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, also are there on the ground of fear. The terrorists are fearful, are angry. Anger. Fear and anger are at the foundation of war and violence. And we are spending a lot of human lives. We are spending a lot of weapons, of money, just because we have fear. We have a lot of anger in us. So it's not only the problem of technology. It is the problem of the poisons in us. We continue to create poisons in us and around us. The three the poisons that we speak of is delusion, anger, and craving. Tham sân si. And also fear. And awakening, enlightenment, can help to reduce and to transform these poisons in us. Everyone has Buddha nature within himself or herself. I'm sure that the Taliban, they have Buddha nature, and they can wake up like all of us. Many of them are also aware of the dangerous situation of our planet. So there may be a kind, maybe it is possible to talk to the people who are fighting in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and the people who are manufacturing nuclear weapons, that the danger is really there. And we should know how to deal with our fear, our anger, and our suspicion. It's not only that the greenhouse gases is destroying us, but it is our fear, our anger, our craving that are destroying us. We have to deal with them. So it's not only the problem of technology, of politics, this problem of dealing with the suffering in us, namely fear, anger, craving, and delusion. We know that it is possible to use, to supply to cover 100% of our the energy that the planet needs by using the power of the wind, of the water, and of the sun, of the sunshine. But in order to have the money, in order to subsidize the companies that are working on that, and so that they can make the price of these energies competitive, we have to stop using our money in making weapons, in fighting wars. It's very important. And we need the leadership in order to do that. We need politicians and others who have the capacity of using loving speech and deep listening in order to talk to all people. Because only when we are able to talk to each other like that and recognize the fear, the anger in us that are the real cause of our difficult situation, that we can help each other transform the fear, the anger, and the delusion in us. Loving speech, deep listening is very important. And with loving speech and deep listening, we can persuade other people, the people who are fighting, to join us in making this change possible. If we allow our fear and our anger to be the ground of our action, we can never do that. So first of all, there should be awakening within ourselves. And we know that many of the things we do are based on fear and anger. And when we wake up, we wake up to that truth. We have the enlightenment, and with that, we can use loving speech and deep listening to talk to other people with whom we have been fighting. And we can touch the seat of enlightenment and the seat of awakening within themselves, because they are also human beings with Buddha nature. $618 billion now, and in 40 years from now, there will be $9.2 billion. It goes very quickly. when we stay together as a Sangha and practice for 90 days in a winter retreat, we have a chance to be together and reflect on the situation. We know that a retreat like that has the power to help us heal ourselves and transform the anger, the fear, the despair in us. And we know that to heal ourselves means to help heal the world. We know very well that peace and hope should begin with ourselves. So having a retreat does not mean that you want to cut off yourself off from everything else, but to really sit down, to be still, and to begin to understand. And that kind of awakening understanding will bring about transformation and healing in ourselves. And with transformation and healing ourselves, we will be in a position to help other people to do the same. Without the healing and transformation in oneself, you cannot do anything. Talking will not be enough. When we are healed, when we have transformed our fear or anger, our way of life will be our message. In our Deer Park monastery in Southern California, we only use solar power 100%. We have every week a day without using car, and we ask our friends to pledge to do the same. So far there have been more than 100,000 no car days reported by our friends. We do not drink alcohol. We do not eat meat, because we know that drinking alcohol and eating meat is not good for our planet. And if we do not suffer when we do that, because there is awakening in us, there is compassion in us, we do that for ourselves, we don't have to suffer. And when we look at the people who consume a lot, we have the impression that even if they consume a lot like that, they are not happy. They are victims of their fear, their anger. They are not really happy, because the fear, the anger, the despair in them are not transformed. And that is why we have to change. We have to help. We have to change our idea of happiness. Of course, we need technology, but we need more than that. If we bring into our daily life a spiritual dimension, and then we know what to do in order to make this possible. Many people still believe that happiness lies in the power to consume. And yet we know that there are so many people who have a lot of money, a lot of power and fame. They suffer very deeply because they think of happiness in terms of pleasure seeking. And when we come to a retreat like the winter retreat in Plum Village or in Deer Park or in Blue Cliff, we know that our lifestyle is very simple. And yet, we have compassion, we have brotherhood, sisterhood, we have peace in ourselves, and that is why we can smile more, we are much happier than if we consume a lot. We can prove to ourselves and to others that happiness is possible without consuming a lot. So even if we stay there together in three months, not doing a lot, but our way of life, our practice, our transformation and healing is very positive. I was invited to go to the the meeting in Sydney, the religious summit, and when I got the letter, I said that, well, Ma, we'll be in the winter retreat, you cannot come. Thank you for trying to do something in order to bring the healing, the transformation, the world. But in Plum Village, we have a winter retreat, and that's our way to bring transformation and healing also. So the organizers of the summit was very understanding, and they said that we appreciate your winter retreat. That is what we need. So we won't need you to come up here, come here, and we try that during the winter retreat we can set up a video link so that you can address our parliament. So Thay will not go, but Thay will be in touch with the Parliament of Religion. So we know that a spiritual dimension should be brought to the situation. That our practice, in order to produce awakening in us, is very important. Because of that awakening, we'll be able to recognize the fear, the anger, the despair in us, so that we can transform them. And when we have transformed our afflictions that are inside of us, that will be manifested on the way we live our daily life. And with that, we can help other people around us to transform. With that awakening, we know that we should have another idea, another notion about happiness. That means you don't need that much consumption in order to be happy. And Ishapas represent the enlightenment of the Buddha. Awareness, concentration, and insight. And together we will help produce the collective enlightenment in the world. I think for the young generation, it is possible to help them to wake up. The young monastics in Plum Village have been working on the movement of young people. Young people for a peaceful, healthy, and compassionate society. And many young people have been responding to the call for the practice. We can touch the seat of Buddhahood, of enlightenment in them. And with the support of the young people, we can accelerate the process of transformation and healing in our society. I remember a retreat organized for police officers, judges, lawyers, and people who work in the field of keeping peace. In that retreat, we practice sitting meditation and walking meditation. And you can imagine that retreat took place in Madison, Wisconsin. You can imagine police officers practicing walking meditation, breathing in, calming, breathing out, smiling, and release tensions. The retreat was difficult. There's a lot of suffering, a lot of anger, a lot of misunderstanding. And with a lot of patience, we were able to conduct the practice. And we could see the transformation taking place during these 6 days of the retreat. We know that people like police officers and prison guards, they live a very difficult life. They have a lot of tension. They have a lot of violence, suffering in them. And every year, there are about 300 police officers in America who shoot themselves with their own guns. Because of the suffering in themselves, they cannot handle. So when you do not have peace in yourself, how can you help establishing peace in your neighborhood? When you have a lot of anger, violence in yourself, how you can keep the peace in society? And that is why it's very important for us to learn how to go back to ourselves, recognize the presence of the anger, of the fear, the despair in us. And with the Buddha Dharma, we can help calm and transform them. And that is also enlightenment, awareness. Breathing in, I'm aware of the anger in myself. Breathing out, I'm taking good care of my anger. When you breathe in like that, you bring your mind back to your body. You realize there is tension and pain in your body. And you know that it is possible to release the tension in your body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I release the tension in my body. That is an exercise recommended by the Buddha. A police officer can practice that. Relaxing the body is something that all of us can practice. And we can practice as a community also. In a family, we can practice together as a family. For 5, for 10, 15, half an hour. 15 minutes, half an hour. And in school, it is possible for school teachers and students to practice deep relaxation, releasing tensions. Because there is tension in the teachers, there's tension in the children. There is a possibility to practice it in the city council, in the parliament. While I was visiting India last year, he was invited to speak in the Indian parliament, and he spoke about this practice. It is possible to practice relaxation, deep listening, and loving speech in the Congress, in the Parliament. So that we can release the tension. We can communicate better. We can make better laws for the country. So this practice can be done in family, in school, in the city council, in the government, in the parliament, and also in corporations. If you want, you may like to introduce this practice into your workplace. And then if you know how to calm your body, to release the tension in your body, and then you know how to handle the painful feeling and the emotion, painful emotion in yourself. When there is anger, when there is a fear, when there is despair, we should know how to practice. And parents should learn in order to teach their children. A school teacher should know in order to help their students to practice. We should bring a spiritual dimension, spiritual practice into our daily life. And you don't have to be a Buddhist in order to do so. The Buddha recommended that every time anger or fear or despair arise, we should go back to our breathing. And breathing deeply, we generate energy of mindfulness, and we recognize the fear, the anger, the despair in us. Breathing in, I know that the energy of anger is in me, or the energy of craving is in me. I know it is burning me, it's making me suffer. So breathing out, I hold my anger. I take good care of my anger. It is like a mother holding her baby who is crying. So the practitioner is holding her anger, her fear like that, very tenderly. And that is what the Buddha recommend. There is a mindfulness, there is anger, mindfulness taking care of anger in a very non-violent way. And you can get a relief if you know how to continue to breathe and to walk slowly and to embrace your anger, your fear. Otherwise, the energy of anger and fear will be destructive in you and around you. You destroy yourself and you destroy other people. Breathing in, I am aware of the anger in me, of the fear in me, of the violence in me. Breathing out, I am holding tenderly the energy of anger and fear in me. And with that practice, we can bring a relief. And if parents and teachers know how to do that, they will help other children, the students to do that. And this is possible. We learn to restrain ourselves as far as craving is concerned. As far as anger and fear is concerned, we can bring a relief. We do not try to suppress our anger, our fear, but we try to embrace them, to recognize them and embrace them. We should know how to handle a strong emotion in us. And that with a spiritual practice, we know how to handle a strong emotion, a painful feeling. And it is possible to teach that in our school. And it is possible to practice it in our workplace. And we can go further. To bring about a relief is possible, but to transform them is also a possibility. Because anger and fear arise from the ground of delusion, wrong perceptions. When you recognize the danger of pleasure seeking, you stop. You stop right away. And that is the work of enlightenment. And mindfulness concentration and concentration always bring about insight. Mindfulness help us to be aware of what is going on. And mindfulness is already enlightenment. You know what is going on. You are awake. You are enlightened. And when you are very mindful of something, you are fully concentrated on it. When you are concentrated, you are very mindful. And concentration, the nature of concentration, is also the nature of enlightenment, of awakening. And mindfulness and concentration contains awakening. And you get insight that will help you to transform your afflictions. And insight is not something far away. It can be found right in mindfulness. When you are aware of the danger of pleasure seeking, that awareness is already mindfulness. And that awareness is already insight. You know that there is a danger in the object of pleasure you are seeking. You can see already the hook in the bite, so you don't want to bite anymore. You know that you will die if you do. So that insight stop you and transform the craving right away. Suppose you speak of eating. If we know, if we look at what we are about to eat, and if we know that it is going to make us suffer after eating, if you are aware of that, we have the insight, and we will stop eating that. So mindfulness and insight, they go together very quickly. We know that eating without moderation will always bring us problems. We have that knowledge. We have been told and we know by ourselves that eating without moderation will bring us a lot of suffering. And yet, sometimes we are indulged in eating and suffer a few hours after that. So, the spiritual dimension in our life is always to bring mindfulness into every moment of our daily life. And we will be able to eat in such a way that preserve the well-being in our body and also in our mind. And a community like ours, Bangladesh. They try to provide us with a sangha, a place to practice. Is to foster the opportunity to create opportunities for the practice of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. Of course, there are many things you can do in order to help stop global warming and things like that. But we know that there is a spiritual dimension we have to bring into. And that is why it's very important for us to sit down together and discuss how can the practice of mindfulness, concentration, and insight could bring a change to our way of life and to preserve our planet. And our purpose is to help produce collective awakening. Only with collective awakening that we have hope. And that is why the retreat in Colorado has had the title One Buddha is Not Enough. Every one of us has to be the continuation of the Buddha. It can produce awakening in us, and with that, help produce awakening in people around.